once we made the decision, we knew it was happening. And there were times when I was like, wait a minute, are we making the right decision here? But we just were decisive and stuck with it and picked the next step going towards the goal that we knew we were working towards.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Looking forward to this. Where is home? I mean, we read up all on the story for Family Co., but where did you guys move to? Where's this little cabin?
Colorado. Yeah, that's why we threw the co in there sometimes.
That makes sense. What town?
Outside of Colorado Springs by Woodland Park.
Okay. Yeah, my sister used to live in Colorado Springs, so that was a...
Oh, cool.
Garden of the Gods is a great spot. I'm sure you guys have been.
Yeah, driving through it the other day. It was like the road actually takes you through it. I'm going somewhere because it's just free access to it anytime. And it's like a shortcut to get around town.
How beautiful.
Where are you two? You're on the coast, right?
We're in Costa Rica.
We live in Costa Rica, part of the year in Florida.
Oh, awesome. Wow. That's really cool. I want to hear that story sometime.
It's also a pandemic story. So we can powwow on that when we get to yours.
Oh, okay.
So,
oh, cool.
Most definitely. Yeah. So, and I'm Jamie.
Jim.
Nice to meet you, Joe, and this is Mel.
Yeah, nice to meet you both. Welcome. So I just start recording from the beginning because so often the candid conversations just start flowing. So we'll record your bio and such separately so we can just start visiting. We usually go 30, 35 minutes and it'll just be a rolling conversation between us and to bring inspiration to our audience. So thanks a bunch for being here, Joe and Mel.
Our pleasure. Look forward to it.
I'm really excited. I've been listening to you guys for a little while and we feel like we share a lot of common values as you. So we're excited for the conversation.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
We were seeing the same thing. And I know people introduced us said that from your training, Joe, right? Someone brought you the 18 summers concept. I love
from
it.
Like one of your groups?
Yeah, it mentioned that. So I do business consulting in the fitness industry. And so there's a group of people that we meet. There's about 100 people in it. And then the CEO level group, there's like 12 of them. And we were out in San Diego meeting and we were talking about families. And one of them, gym owner in Pennsylvania named Devin, brought up the 18 summers concept as a way to try to keep the business people grounded a little bit. Because a lot of us in that group are a little bit older. We have kids. We're not just like the single trainer who tries to run and train people at 6 a.m. and then 10 p.m. and all over the place. They mentioned that concept. I thought that was really cool.
Awesome. And so you were a teacher and a trainer, and Mel, you were a social worker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all kinds of things.
Yep. I counseled families in abusive situations for 5 years. And then after we had our second son, I decided to stay home and be home with the kids. And then also I took on some of the bookkeeping work for the gym because at that time, Joe was doing both the gym and teaching and needed some help with the financial aspect. We're just very flexible and supportive of each other as time went on and just kind of saw where things would take us. And now we're here and it's been a really cool journey.
So cool. And how old are your children now?
We have three boys. Logan is 13, Henry's 11, and Everett is 5.
Yeah, that boy energy is something, huh?
It is.
That's funny. So before 2020, you guys were doing your thing out. And where did you begin your journey? Where was home before your big transition?
Upstate New York.
Okay. So very different from where you ended up. And now social work, teaching, you were very much in the public and working with others and probably very outwardly focused being on your students and your clients and your patients and such. And then I guess, did everyone get brought home 2020? What did that look like?
Yeah. So on our career side, Mel had started to stay home with the kids and I transitioned from teaching. I love teaching, but the business took off so much that I had to choose one. And so I chose the fitness industry because I saw a bigger future and we expanded from our little garage gym and starting to purchase and expand studios. And all of a sudden we have these 800 members we're doing personal training for and companies taking off, especially in New York. It was one of the longest closures that we were closed for almost 9 months. And mm-hmm. I have a staff to pay for. And then all of a sudden schools are closed and going fully remote for over a year and a half in New York as well. And that wasn't the best situation for our kids to do online learning, especially one of our kids struggled a little bit. And so Mel stepped up and offered to do homeschooling that year across the two higher grade levels.
Wow.
And then we just had to reevaluate is this the place we want to be in the future for our family and our companies and our business? And we also, I forgot to mention, we had 8 rental units at that time, and they had a long rental moratorium that was multiple years. And I know your background in real estate, you're familiar with that. And everyone stopped paying rent for about 2 years, and we still had mortgages to pay. Wow, and so we ended up liquidating all those properties. We toughed it out with the gym. We had a great staff. We brought the kids home. We took that money, flew across the country and started to invest in some short-term rentals to get around the lease rent moratorium so we could still continue to invest and try to create a financial future for our family while all that was going on. And Mel, I'll let you share the homeschooling experience.
Yeah, so this was all extremely new to me. I mean, Joe has this way where he'll have a really cool concept and idea like, hey, what if we moved across the country? And then my personality, I just panic. So I'm like, what do you mean? This is all I know. Like, my family's here, your family's here. This is like ridiculous. And same kind of idea with homeschooling, where it's never something I thought I would do. And I almost waited till like the week before school started to make the decision. I just realized this is something I need to do. It's better for the kids. And this is how we started to focus in on what we value and what's most important for us as a family. And then actually, to go back to the moving idea, the very next day, we try to take a walk together every day to stay connected, talk about the kids, talk about life. And this is what came up on one of those walks where Joe mentioned, what if we just moved? And I panicked. But then the next morning, here we are printing a list of the 50 states and seeing where we could see ourselves and where we could see ourselves not going. And we just wanted a place with sun and adventure and that fit our values better. And even the school system, the particular program our oldest son that we were most concerned about was going into was this mountain academy where there's lots of outdoor learning. They go rafting, they go to the Cave of the Winds, which is like underground cave, and all these different parks around here that they would go to and learn there. So it just seemed to really fit our values. And as soon as we got the ball rolling, we saw all the opportunities. You still feel bad about leaving people that you love, but we started to see all these opportunities that were going to be presented to us if we moved, and we haven't looked back.
I want to definitely unpack this because this is a really important thing. So we're talking 2020, 2 careers, social work had already been put behind for family priority, teaching, and now the gym and rental property. And unfortunately, I have very good friends that took years to build a rental portfolio. You've probably heard me talk about them on the podcast. And they went from having an income they built and earned to having to write checks. And so you got hit with everything. Gyms closed, rental moratorium. New York and California have the worst in the world, probably, along with Chicago and Illinois. So you guys got hit hard with it. And you say, we need to make a move. We need to do it now. But probably every 5 minutes felt like 5 years at certain points of that, because you're feeling it financially, relationally, the family, like, what are we doing? How did you make it through each of those early days? Like, what was the top one or two things? Because this is really important for a lot of our listeners to know.
Yeah, Mel will go into the concept one step at a time, which helped her get through the panic. And for me, I just would say this saying over again. We heard it in one of Jocko's book, which is control the controllables. There's so much that I cannot do anything about right now. So I can't read the paper and I can't worry about this thing with the rental properties. Like, the situation was really bad. Like, we're kind of do-gooder types, teacher, social worker, but I would go to look at the fitness studios and people would drive by and call the police on me for like being in a fitness studio when I'd like to make sure our HVAC is up to standard so we could reopen it at some point. And now I'm getting the police called on me. And then same thing happened with the rental properties. Like, hey, this grass is too long. We were like, all right, well, I'll go over and cut it. Then the tenant would call the police for the landlord being on the property. And now I got code enforcement on top of me for trying to do something that they told me to do. And we just had to put all that stress to the side and say, what can we control? Well, we're home with our kids. It takes a lot of these organizational health things that we learned over the years to create a company and spend that kind of time and energy in our family. I was spending much more time on running the company and organization. I was thrilled. Like, I was so proud. Like, hey, I started this gym in my basement. Now it's this big 7-figure company. And I was not putting the same amount of effort into the family, and it was a good reset. And I could control that. And I could start sitting down at the dinner table now, which I couldn't before. And I could start working on family values. And that was a big piece. So for me, it was control the controllables. Mel?
The concept that got me through was one step at a time. So literally we would name the next thing that we could focus on. Cause I think ahead, I'm saying, how is this going to affect us later? Well, what if we have to sell the house? We're going to have to homeschool. I still had a little baby at the time and my mom would come and help with him. And I felt guilty about that because I wasn't spending a lot of time with him. So Joe and I, on one of these walks again, he's like, we have to focus on just the next thing. What's the next thing? Meeting with a real estate agent to list the house. Okay. We're not going to think about how sad we're going to be about leaving. And at this point, I don't even think we had told the kids yet, because that was going to be another step that was going to be very emotional. And one of them did not take it well. So that was hard too. But we literally every day would just talk and say, what's the next one thing we can do? What's the next one thing we can control? And this has kind of become a motto in our family. Because once we did tell the kids, the one who was excited is like, well, do we get to move and then buy a four-wheeler? And we're like, that's step 10,000. Like, we're on step three. So I think
that's step one for him.
It was in his mind. Right.
Yes, exactly. So I think it helped the kids also understand that there are other steps that have to take place, and they were able to participate in that. So for example, whenever we would have a house showing, we would have these three bins and everything would come down from the homeschooling stuff. Cause I had like stuff taped on the walls and we had a whole system and they could participate in that. So I think it was a growth thing for all of us. But for me personally, it was super important to just focus on the one step so that it kept me from getting overwhelmed. And on the other side of it too, is the fact that we had finally just made the decision to move. It wasn't like we were in limbo. I think a lot of people stay in limbo because they're not able to just be decisive. Once we made the decision, we knew it was happening. And there were times when I was like, wait a minute, are we making the right decision here? But we just were decisive and stuck with it and picked the next step going towards the goal that we knew we were working towards. And at the same time, trying to help the kids, that the one who was not on board with this, I mean, he wouldn't even talk to me. He wouldn't let me hug him at night. That used to be like our time to connect. So I did this little thing where I started leaving him little notes in his room. So just like an I love you, because I recognized that's where he was at. He needed me to not push my own personal agenda of wanting a hug from my kid. And initially when he would find these notes, he would look at me and just rip them. It was heartbreaking, but eventually started to enjoy them. And maybe a month into this, he's like, I think you can hug me today. To go back to the point of how we handled this, because it was an emotional, difficult decision, was recognizing that everybody in the family is going to have a different reaction to this. And as parents, you have to be a bit selfless and see where your kids are at and meet them where they're at. So that was a bit of my process of how we got through it.
It's such a good point. And I think that you're better at identifying, saying this won't last forever. You know, like when the children have a moment, like for me, I would have been like, oh, they're never going to like me again. And I have such a high need for everything to feel very copacetic. Like it just needs to be feel a certain way. And I imagine it's your oldest that struggled.
It was the middle one.
Okay.
The friendship thing was big for him. Yeah. He had like five friends he didn't want to leave, and nothing else he cared about.
It's a whole world.
But as they start going through shifts and changes, I know I feel those nuances as mom, and you're like, ah, it's fine, I'll move on. But like, one of our kids didn't tell me he loved me for like a year. He wasn't mad at me. He was just finding himself in like a relationship with a young woman, and he didn't know how that translated between his love for me versus his love for her. It was like this whole awkward thing. And I was like, he's never going to tell me again. And then he's like, just keep telling them. And then I did. And one day he said it first. I'm like, oh, you were right. It circles back. But he said, just what if you would have pushed the agenda? It would have taken him so much longer, or maybe never. I think meeting them where they're at is so important, and seeing them as an individual. You can't love child A the same way that you love child C.
Such a great point, Jamie. And it shows a ton of maturity. I'm very proud of Mal. On our walk, she would then share how much stress that put her under, but she was still outwardly working through the process. And you're right, like they can set up very big barriers. And I remember a fellow teacher, he was a great teacher, he ended up moving as well, that there was someone that would come in his classroom every day, and like she was like super grumpy one morning. He's like, we're gonna stand here and like solve this. And he's like, that was one of the biggest mistakes I made, because that student like hated me for the rest of the year. Now it was like a clash of egos. Like, I'm not going to be nice to this guy because he tried to make me stay after class. And same thing can happen with kids. You just want to take the ego pull out of it and kind of ride it out, like you mentioned Jim's good at. It's growing pains. They'll get there.
I think that's the yin and yang for us. There are certain things Jamie is so I mean, even keel common, where it's like, oh no, they might need a few stitches, but let them do it. And I'm like, I don't want to run and like grab them off of something. But then in these things, I can see certain things where I'm like, yeah, but as soon as he's not feeling well or down, who does he go sit next to and start talking to? And like, you can see different things when you're a little bit out of it. And I think that's where we keep each other accountable. But to your credit, Mel, that patience is so important. And that's something we learned with our own family dynamic. And one of the stories, and hopefully this translates to it, when Jamie and I took the foster care classes, we became friends with the lady who taught us this class. And she told us this story that just basically, Mel, you did the opposite of what these people did. There was this beautiful little boy. He was adopted by this foster family. They went into foster and then went into full adopt, and they adopted him. And believe it or not, there's a return policy. And they returned him about 4 months later. And she said the reason they returned him is because they were upset that this little boy, who was about 7, would not call the guy dad. And she started to explain that that word at the time for him, the definition that that word had built before he came into a safe home in this foster environment, it was like probably a huge swear word. It was not a word of safety or comfort. It was the opposite. So these people tried to force this need or knowing that they needed on this little boy. And they literally broke up the family and returned him because he wouldn't come to it. And I think with a little time, knowing the situation I went through, and believe it or not, when I hear something like, wow, in the pandemic, you took the 180 opposite, you didn't force your own needs on. I'm just giving you pretty much a cyber high five right now.
I really appreciate that. And I want to bring up how a piece of why I was able to do that is because Joe and I communicate. Being able to do for my middle child what he needed, I was capable of doing that because I could go with the emotional part and talk to Joe about it. So oftentimes we really try to have like a low heart rate situation in our family where we try to stay as calm as possible with whatever situation arises. And a lot of that is possible because we go on these walks, we talk about stuff ahead of time so that when the kid comes home from school and there was a problem, or when this arose with my middle child, I'm more emotionally prepared because I know I will have the outlet and be able to talk to Joe about it on our walks. It's not like I can just do that for my middle child and then just be fine. Like, I still have to deal with my response. And then I deal with that as an adult by talking with my spouse about it. That was a huge piece of what got me through as well. Joe's my sounding board and it makes me laugh. Humor is a big piece of our relationship too.
Now, you guys talk a lot about family values. And now, can you tell me, part of being in a family is values, and whether you openly communicate those values or like you have them regardless, right? It's just sometimes it's better known than others. And can you explain that process to us a bit of how you established your family values?
Sure. Joe talked about how he's been in business, and we recognized that in business, there are core values of a company. They have it written down. It's well thought out. It's on paper or on the wall or whatever, but everybody knows what they are. And we had read in a book, I'm not sure where it was, but you can apply these things to family living. Oftentimes you grow up, you want to have a family, and you just kind of think things will organically just be great. But we thought we need to put more effort into being very specific. So our process, we've come up with 6 core values for our family, and they are displayed. This has been years now, so the kids have them memorized, and we have many ways throughout every week that we implement these values and embody them with the kids. But the way we actually originally came up with them was we took about 2 weeks, and we individually spent some time writing down everything that we find valuable in our lives. Spiritual stuff, reading, cooking, music, having gratitude, like anything that would pop up in our lives that we thought was important, we would write down. And then we met up together and we figured out, we whittled it down to 6. So it was a lot of like deep, really cool discussion about what we find important and what we find important as a family unit. So we were able to whittle that down to 6.
Yeah, and I want to give Jamie some credit on what you just said as well. So it was one of the most important realizations we had is that our kids are going to have values, whether we define them or not. And it could be a coach, could be classmates. Some of them will be good, some of them will be bad, but we don't want to leave it up to chance on what are the core ones. So we didn't want to leave like, hey, we want you to be vaguely good. It's like Jim Collins saying like good to great. Like things can be good, but if you want to get them great, you got to define them and you have to hold the standard and you got to help the kids along the way. And so it was important to us to choose a few of the core ones to help them filter decisions when they're trying to decide who to hang out with, what TV shows to watch, what to listen to when other people are putting values on them out in the world. And so we wanted them to have this framework.
Would you like to hear what our values are?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So the first one is be genuine. So we want each individual person in the family to be who they truly are and not feel like they have to be like dad or be like mom, but they all have their individual talents and abilities. The next one is having gratitude, which I mentioned earlier. This is really important for us. I try to always find the silver lining in every situation to the point where the kids are like nauseated by it. They're like, mom, this was just bad. I'm like, oh, you can try to find something good in that. And we
get the eye rolls.
But I think that constant mindset of having gratitude helps you get through your day and not be so grouchy. Another one is be adventurous. This is a big piece of why we moved. Living near Colorado Springs, I mean, you can't even ask for a place with more adventure. So it's very easy to be able to go out and do things on the weekends or in the evening or whatever. We even have a hiking trail behind the house. So it's really special, the spot that we ended up in. Another, which is my favorite, is wanting to be together. So we want the kids to be able to want to be with us even when they don't have to be with us. So once they move out or have their own life, we still want there to be that connection. We want to foster that as much as we can. We noticed this at home. Like we're oftentimes, like we just implemented like a no tech Thursday because we wanted to be able to see what will happen. And it's really cool things happen. You end up playing games together. Yesterday, my oldest went in the hot tub with my youngest. Otherwise, they might have been doing something individually. So it's really special what that value has placed on our family. You want to cover the last two?
Yeah, they kind of go together, personal growth and accountability. And Mel mentioned like be genuine. But you can't be genuinely lazy. Like you could like different things. Like people assume like I played college athletics and so your kids will play college athletics. I'm like, I don't really care. They can do what they want. A couple of them like sports. One of them loves robotics. And so whatever you want to go into, however, you are accountable for you being good at that thing. And so you need to develop yourself and work towards it. And yes, accountability helps when there's little arguments in the household. We want to get away from the argument, start being more solution oriented. However, they are accountable for their personal growth and development. So those are our last two.
Love it.
That's great. Like being genuine. Like
we have a lot of overlap.
We have a lot. Yeah, we do have a lot of overlap. Adventure is one of ours as well.
I think what's really important is you guys did six. I think we have seven. It is still a sheet of paper with a surfboard. We did it on markers and we put it on there.
But a similar coming too, where we had 300 words and everybody had to go through and circle. And then we discussed and some words were similar to other words. And then trying to figure out, okay, even if we don't have as much of like, what do we want to identify as?
Yeah. And you guys just made a big move. And you went from this business to this. You went from New York rentals to Colorado short-term rentals. You guys want a different lifestyle. We did the same thing with Costa Rica and this simple values list. And again, what I love is it doesn't have to be 147 words. In fact, if it is, kids are going to just glaze their eyes backwards.
Exactly.
We call it our spaghetti strainer. And so it's like, you know, when you have the spaghetti strainer, you dump it through and you want the other stuff to move through and the good stuff to stay that you're going to eat. That's what we call our short values list. And that's what it sounds like. You guys have used that as your spaghetti strainer to make some pretty big decisions. And not easy ones, but that keeps the good stuff in and lets the other stuff fall away.
That's a great analogy. And we did a business game called Kill Keeper Combine. We had this huge list, like you mentioned, and then we crossed out the ones that weren't like the core values. Then we combined, like James said, a lot of these that were the same. And then we would keep the great ones and we'd do that over and over again until we get down to a list that's manageable because it's overwhelming. And we constantly say this, like what's memorable is portable. If you can carry it in your mind, you can live it in your life. We give them 150 values. I wouldn't remember six at that point because it would be too much. I would just shut down.
And I think what the values help do, this is with your strainer example, it helps you filter out just making decisions based on feelings. Because sometimes I would start feeling guilty, like, but we're going to leave the family, like that doesn't seem like okay. But then we would remind ourselves, well, these are our core values. We took a lot of time and effort into figuring out what we're about. And we don't want to derail ourselves just because I have a moment of guilt or my feelings that day are just too strong. So it helps us really have a filter system. And even for the kids, like my middle schooler this year, it's been a challenge to go to middle school. You hear a lot of new ideas, a lot of new things that don't align with our values. And he's made some really good decisions on who he has spent time with. And I asked him one day, I'm like, well, what's helped you this year? And he says, honestly, and I couldn't believe he said this. He's like, because we have some family values. I'm like, wow. Even if you might not realize it, it gives him a thought process versus just being taken by whatever idea might feel good that day.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
And I think an important point here is we're below you guys and above in ages right now. And there comes a confession point, just to let you guys, which is really nice, where our almost 20, almost 18 have really said, hey, this stuff that we thought was so crazy and we were like the weird family in this, like, thanks. Yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
Not always, but we've seen a positive confession. It's come.
Jim, I will hold you to that. No, I know what you mean, though. We eventually hope that they want to start their own families and we don't want them to wing it. We want them to have this structure and strategy to go into it. And I know sometimes structure and strategy can sound boring, but it's made our family life so much more enjoyable.
Well, and it really teaches them about a whole. They're not self-centered. They're kind of world-centered or family-centered. And I think that the greatest thing we can do for our children is to teach them that it's not all about them. It's about the collective. It's about all of us. Tell us a bit about this strong family code. Like, how are you using your experiences to help others?
Yeah, so we created something that we call the Strong Family Path, which we just give away on our website, which are the 7 elements that we use to run the family. We don't tell people like what to believe in. It's just, here's the structure that you could. So we don't say, here, adopt our core values, but here's the process to come up with your own core values. And here's the process to do family goal setting, which is a whole nother conversation. Like, how do you teach kids to be proficient and self-confident and contribute to the family? And so here's how we do it. And so we created this Strong Family Path framework, which people can use in their own family to help get some guidance.
Well, Mel, what are the 7, if it's not too much of a cheat?
No, that's okay. So the first one is the creating your core values, which we've talked a lot about. The next is goal setting, which Joe mentioned. And then we have a morning routine where we want the kids to wake up and have a way to contribute to the family and not just kind of roll out of bed and see what happens. Like little mini workout in the morning, they do a contribution in the kitchen, they have a journal. And then the next one is we strive to have a family dinner every day. This is not something that we could do when we were living in New York because Joe was always gone working. Whoa. So we have a family dinner and we share gratitude every night to align with that value. And then once a week, we do a family meeting during that dinner and we have a whole structure of how we run the meeting. And just to give you a little like teaser, the first thing we do is everybody goes around and talks about a way that they've embodied one of our 6 values that week. So we're always keeping that fresh. After that, we have the evening debrief, which this kind of comes from my therapy background. You might have a client sitting with you for 40 minutes and they're talking about what they had for dinner or whatever. And then the last 5 minutes come and that's when they bring up like the real topic that needs to be addressed. So we found that this usually happens in the evening when the kids are like, they just took their shower, they brushed their teeth, they're settling in to like watch a cartoon or whatever. And this is when I come in and do a little prayer with them. And then they will then tend to bring up topics. We're not like, hey, what do you want to bring up? It just kind of organically comes up because they're in this comfort zone. At this point of the day, it's like 9 p.m. I'm exhausted. All I want to do is go to bed. But I recognize that that extra half hour that I give them, they open up to me. We can problem solve. And it's a really special time that I make sure that I carve out regardless of how tired I might be. Because again, being a parent, it's you have to be selfless in those moments. And finally, we focus on the relationships within the family. And I think you kind of maybe touched on this earlier. So we're a big family unit, but then there's also every parent to every child to their sibling, and then every individual has a relationship with themselves. So we try to keep tabs on that. And I think this is where you mentioned earlier, Jamie, maybe you're better at figuring out when like one kid seems a little off, or something's not quite right with this child. So oftentimes on our walks, we'll discuss, I'll bring up, you know, I'm noticing the oldest is struggling right now. I think something's going on. I think we might need to spend some one-on-one time with him and help him, give him some more support. So I think it's important to recognize that within a family, there's tons of like mini relationships that need focus as well. So that's more of a mindset, not really like a step of the path, but a mindset overarching every step.
I love that. And I think an important thing there's a lot of overlap between our families, like you said. I actually say on some of my talks and interviews, I said, look, if you listen to nothing else I say, just hear this one thing. You've got to separate the parts of strength from the whole. You have to have that individual time when just you two are walking together. You know, you, Mel, are with your oldest, where Joe, you are just with your youngest. It's that one-to-one principle. When you separate those parts, the whole becomes stronger. And that's one of the biggest key elements I've seen from interviewing and working with thousands of families. When they do that, the results are normally better. It's no coincidence to me that you guys finale with that right there with your seven principles.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. a great way of saying it. Often we think like the relationship between husband and wife, which does require work. And Mel was listening to you on date night and all these great concepts. But we don't really think necessarily about like the kids' relationship with themselves. What do they view of themselves today? And how can we help that? And which one of us can help that better? And like trying to put all the pieces together. And you said it very eloquently.
And just to give you like an example, last night during evening debrief, my oldest just seemed like something was on his mind, but I could tell sometimes he might not want to talk about it in front of the 11-year-old. So like I went to bed last night and I thought, oh, I feel so unresolved. I offered him like, do you want to go talk to me? But he said no, and I wasn't going to push it. But I felt so unresolved about it. And just the last couple of days, I don't know why, but he's been setting his alarm early. So he comes up at like 6 a.m. before the other one's up. And I thought, this is my opportunity. So I asked him, I said, you know, last night you seemed a little off. Is there something going on? And he was able to open up to me with some nudging. But I took advantage of that maybe 10, 15 minute one-on-one time that kind of just was handed to me this morning. I didn't plan for it. I didn't make him wake up early to come talk to me. So I think because I had that sense last night that something was off, and then this morning, an opportunity presented itself where I could spend a little time with him, was really worthwhile. I think that happened because I have this mindset of having a focus on what's going on with each kid.
Yeah, and you also set the stage, right? I mean, we joke in different workshops and things, like me as a 13-year-old, like bring me death before having to discuss puberty with a 7-year-old mother or something, right? I mean, there's nothing comfortable or helpful about that. So choosing your environment and timing like you were, as you said, things just don't happen. There is strategy here. It doesn't have to be difficult, but you do have to be aware of it and put it to practice for better results.
You might not have identified that moment if you were too stuck in your guilt, you know what I mean? Or if you were too stuck in the emotion of it, instead of saying, okay, well, where is there an opportunity? And I think it's just like anything. When you're business minded, you seem more attuned to solve problems in your business and in your relationship with your spouse. I just think the more you think about it, or the more you're in it, or the more you're committed to it, the more you see ways to find solutions.
I agree. As soon as you become opportunity oriented, the opportunities seem to just pop up. Because I think they're always there, but it's like, do I have the ability to see them? Am I seeking them out? Because honestly, in the morning, I started getting up early because I wanted my time to myself to read or whatever. And I could have just said, well, I'll just leave this conversation for later because this is my me time. But I had to see that opportunity for what it was and just go for it.
Guys, where can people find more about Family Code, your seven principles for structuring the family? Where can they find you guys?
Yeah, I appreciate it. We're at strongfamilyproject.com because we believe that we're a working project. And like Jamie just said, it's a lot about intentionality. It doesn't necessarily mean like follow our exact method. It's just, hey, let's have a conversation and get purposeful about what we're doing. And I think everyone's outcomes will improve. And so over at the Strong Family Project, we have our podcast and Instagram, and we give away the seven elements of the path and our notes on how we did it for our family, which you can take and adapt for yours.
Great. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I've learned a lot.
Yeah, these were great conversations. We'll look forward to having another one with you guys soon.
I love that.
Thank you so much. Like, we learn a lot, and I'm going to use the spaghetti analogy.
I love that. Well, I've taken notes on your podcast that I just recently listened to the three principles from your book, like the one-on-one, the tech fasting. So I wrote that down and I shared it with Joe because, again, it's nice to talk to people who also are on a similar path and we can learn from each other too.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons we love this podcast, because it's like, let's have conversations and learn and meet new people.
So. Well, we started during the pandemic, just as you guys, it was a big shift for us because we're like, well, gosh, we're home. And we had two extra children, foster children at the time. We're like, gosh, we might as well connect in other ways with people. And so It's about finding those opportunities to get what you need and then help others. So
we're really enjoying it. I never put anyone on the spot, but you'll probably get an email from us to see if you want to be on ours down the road so we can help share your story as well. We're in the middle of a bigger paid marketing campaign. So we're getting a bigger email list so we can share stories with more people. And so expect that email. You don't have to commit now, but of course,
I
really appreciate that. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. Likewise. Y'all have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thanks. Likewise.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.